Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. On the radio, who do we, Nova M, that's right. I knew it sounded something like that. Nova M Radio Network, thanks for tuning in. For those of you who are subscribers or members of the Founders Club, we just did send off to Ben Birch the Malloy's Uncensored Mailbox posting for... I guess Ben will have it up tomorrow. It's been about 10 days since we had a new one. This one is really bizarre. So, well, they're all bizarre. If you're not a member or a founding member of Nova M Radio, you can become one, not just for the Malloy's Uncensored Mailbox stuff, but also for other things available to founding members. Just go to novamradio.com and click on the part that says founding members. The $150,000 clothing thing has certainly made it through one full news cycle. We brought this up last night, right, Kathy? We found it last. Somebody sent it to me. It was like a breaking news. Like, who gives a damn? But anyway, yes, we do give a damn, especially when it comes from an organization that made such a big deal about a haircut. You know what Republicans do. You know what they do. And McCain, did you see McCain is still out there talking about the spread the wealth around? I mean, how many times did your parents say that to you when you were a kid growing up? Well, you got to spread the wealth around a little bit here. You know, so I'm going to increase your salary and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they just try so hard to turn it into something that Karl Marx said. As a matter of fact, I saw a political cartoon in the Richmond News Leader today that was just that. This great big drawing of Karl Marx sitting there with Das Kapital or whatever on his lap, and what Obama said about spreading the wealth around a little bit, and trying desperately to draw this connection. It's a goddamn throwaway line, Jesus. You know, what happens if Barack Obama says something like, when I take my dog for a walk, he pees up against a fire hydrant. Oh my God, he's against the fire department. Listen, he's dissing the fire department. He said his dog pees on a fire hydrant. Oh, my God. Do you want this man? See? No experience. No leadership. His dog pisses against a fire hydrant. This is what this wonderful team of McCain, Palin, considers to be gut-level issues that America will decide upon in the voting booth, on which America would decide who to vote for. When they go, in, oh, please, you know, I will be so glad when this is over. And Sarah Palin can go back to suggesting to the librarian in Wasilla which book should be banned. And McCain can prepare himself for whatever's coming his way as a result of his melanomas. Oh, Jesus, these people. But I digress. The $150,000 on the clothing. The reason I'm bringing it up is this. The robocall firm... FLS Connect, it's called, is led by a Republican activist and protege of Karl Rove. His name is Jeff Larson. Now, this is the same thug, punk, that Bush hired 8 years ago to destroy McCain with robocalls. This is how you know McCain was a cowardly little pee-all-over-himself traitor when he was shot down over Vietnam, when he was murdering civilians. Anybody who hires someone who did to McCain what happened to McCain back in 2000, you know, McCain just rolled over, stuck his legs in the air and spread his legs and said, oh, don't beat me, don't kick me, please. Now he hires this guy. He hires this piece of human waste. Well, Jeff Larson, it turns out, is the personal shopper for the lipstick pig woman from Wasilla, Jeff Larson. He's the guy who went out and did the shopping, huh? Buried in the FEC disclosure, the form that revealed Palin's taste for the fine life, is the name of the man who appears to have been her personal shopper, and it's Jeff Larson. You see, under FEC regulations, and thanks to Steve Bennon for this at WashingtonMonthly.com, Steve lets us know, under FEC regulations, the Republican National Committee must file what is called a Schedule F form. No, it doesn't stand for that. Which lists, quote, expenditures made by political committees or designated agents on behalf of candidates for federal office, end quote. Now, along with the matching dates and dollar totals, there is something called the transaction ID number, which clearly connects the questionable expenditures with reimbursement payments made to Jeff Larson. Now, what's so incompetent about this? Just totally, this is so McCain Palin. From the perspective of the sneakiness of politics, is that both parties ordinarily take the easy precaution of making sure that this kind of embarrassing material isn't obvious to the filter, you know, the reporters. Now, how do they do that? Well, they route the payment through a law firm or a consultant, and then it's hidden. They didn't do it this time. So Jeff Larson, little piece of human excrement that handled the robocalls against John McCain 8 years ago, in which they accused his wife of being a junkie. She was at one time, but she got the cure. They said McCain and his wife had adopted a, oh, God, oh, a Negro baby. Oh, oh, Jesus. Oh, ooh, help me. Help me, Rhonda. And all sorts of other stuff. And, of course, the Yahoos in South Carolina, the white Yahoos to whom this was directed, that was enough.
What? He's got a Negro baby? Oh, goddamn, I ain't voting for him. The South will rise again.
So that guy, Jeff Larson, who put the thing together, is the personal little bitch for Sarah Palin. Went out, took the $150,000, and bought her all the nice threads. Common woman of the small town, yada yada. Anyway, the New York Times has confirmed what Steve Bennon put out in the Washington Monthly, that the Republican consultant and robocall firm executive Jeff Larson bought Miss Palin's clothes and was reimbursed by the RNC. But wait a second, there's more. Josh Marshall at Talking Points Memo, he reminds everybody about the few degrees of separation between these Republican sleaze masters. Josh Marshall says, quote, Jeff Larson is not only John McCain's chief robocaller and Senator Palin's clothes shopper, he's also the guy who's giving that sweetheart rental deal on his apartment in Washington, D.C., to Senator Norm Coleman, Republican of Minnesota, who's going to have his ass handed to him by you know who. You know who. Okay, I'll say his name, Al Franken. I have a personal beef with Al Franken, but I guess I can put it aside as he eviscerates Norm Coleman, right? The Republican circles are like those little magical rings when you flush your commode after you've had a real bad night of drinking and eating too much pizza and then Chinese food, right, and a lot of booze. And you wake up in the middle of the night, and somehow you get to the bathroom just in the nick of time. And then you flush, and everything kind of swirls round and round and round and round and round and round. Boop. And then gone. That's what these guys in the Republican Party are like. Those little concentric circles, that little spiral that goes round and round and round as the toilet takes the waste away. Oh, it'll be a great getting up morning when these people are gone, won't it? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run.
The best of America is in these small towns that we get to visit and in these wonderful little pockets of what I call real America, being here with all of you, hardworking, very patriotic, very pro-America areas of this great nation.
Wow, some pro-America Americans. Well, I'll be damned. What a freak. What an absolute freak this woman is. Jesus. Oh, well. Palin now says the election result rests in God's hands. I always thought it was in the hands of the voters, but then what do I know? The Associated Press is reporting that Sarah Palin, who describes herself as a hardcore pro-lifer, you know, when people adopt phrases from certain vernaculars, I wish they would stop and consider what the original meanings were about. Like people say, well, you know, I think he's going to come out of the closet and declare himself to be a Democrat. You know, coming out of the closet has a certain meaning. It has nothing to do with declaring yourself a Democrat. Using the term hardcore has nothing to do with being so-called pro-life, and most pro-lifers are not. What they are is pro-fetusers. They are not pro-life. If they were pro-life, they would be adamantly and unequivocally opposed to, say, the death penalty or war. Pro-lifers are not pro-life. They are pro-fetus. Oh, never mind. So she's a hardcore pro-lifer, and she was on this freakish James Dobson's program, radio program, that aired today. Palin said she thought Republican presidential candidate John McCain would implement the Republican platform if elected. Now, McCain doesn't support the platform on three issues important to evangelicals: abortion, gay marriage, and embryonic stem cell research. The platform, written by right-wing religious freaks, calls for this constitutional ban on gay marriage. Hey, dumbasses, that's never, ever, 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 ever going to happen. Ever. Okay? So forget about it. Not until you change the Constitution to the point where you don't have to go through the process required to install a constitutional amendment into the Constitution. So forget that. The ban on gay marriage, constitutional ban on gay marriage, that's what the right-wingers use to lure you freaks into the voting booth to vote for them. They're like Venus flytraps, you know. They exude some kind of a scent that flies say, oh, wow, man, I want to go there. And they land, and then the Venus flytrap closes around them and devours them alive. That's how you freaks are being used with this constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. It's never going to happen. Never, ever, ever, ever. Now, McCain says that issue should be left to individual states. Oh, shut up, Lumpy. You don't. If somebody says to you you're going to lose 50,000 votes, you'll change your position post haste. The platform also seeks a constitutional ban on all abortions, rape, incest. It doesn't make any difference. You know, if you have a 12-year-old girl who's
gibbering, drooling father screws her and she gets pregnant, according to these people,
have the baby! That's God working in her!
McCain supports allowing states to decide the question. Well, that's a coward's way out, but it's it differs from the psycho reaction to a woman's right to have privacy to choose an abortion if she wants to. And, of course, embryonic stem cell research. McCain supports it, and the Republican nutballs oppose it. Now, see, this is an example of McCain being a maverick. I'm a goddamn maverick. I'll take off my six guns and shoot you right in the crotch. I'm a maverick. See, here's the proof. Dobson asked Palin whether or not she was discouraged by polls showing that the Republicans are going to have their ass handed to him, although he didn't word it that way. And Palin said, quote, to me, it motivates us. It does, makes us work that much harder. And it also strengthens my faith because I'm going to know at the end of the day, or is that the end of days, putting this in God's hands, that the right thing for America will be done at the end of the day on November 4th. So I'm not discouraged at all. So if you guys get hammered, then God is looking at you, Sarah, and saying, get out of my sight. You think? Consider it. Dobson, of course, being the cowardly little sneaky bastard that he is, who first said he could never, never vote for McCain, he now supports the McCain-Palin ticket because of Palin. Because she's such a nut freak, and that's what Dobson loves. She's a good little bitch who will do exactly as she told, because it says in the Bible that you can pretend to be this and pretend to be that, but when your husband says, God damn it, get over here, you jump. You do exactly what you're told. So that's why Dobson loves her. He knows that she'll do exactly what she's told. She also used terms like, in this interview, like prayer warrior and intercession, words that are unknown to the average listener, but that's right up there with rapture and left behind and all those scary words and phrases that the Christian right uses. Palin also said the campaign had to have faith that its message will be heard, minus the filter of the mainstream media. So apparently she's threatening to do away with newspapers and television and magazines when she becomes the leader of the Senate.
With millions in profits, it's just another lie. Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state blue?
A vice president has a really great job. They're in charge of the United States Senate. So if they want to, they can really get in there with the senators and make a lot of good policy changes that will make life better for Brandon and his family and his classroom.
She makes the sign of a teaspoon, he makes the sign of a wave. The poor boy changes clothes and puts on aftershave.
25 before the hour. All right, sit down, brace yourself, get the vomit bucket nearby, because now we're going to play some Caribou Barbie for you. The killer from Wasilla. She was interviewed yesterday on CNN by somebody named Drew Griffin. Who in the hell is this guy? I've never heard of Drew Griffin. But he sat down with the Moose Queen and asked her some questions about her delusional ambition to become the next vice president, a job about which she knows obviously nothing. So let us begin. Listen here first as she claims she's better equipped to manage the economy because she has more experience than Barack Obama. Jesus God. Mr. Griffin says, 2 months ago, people wanted to know who you were, where you were from. I think now people want to know your views on the economy. Wait a second. Drew, we don't give a tinker's damn about her views on the economy. We really don't, because she doesn't have any. I digress. Drew says, what will you do day one? Day one, what will you do
day one to tell the American people things are changing for the better.
We don't like to toot our own horn, so I don't talk about my experience that much in terms of years in office or in positions.
What are you going to do?
Executive experience, but I do have more executive experience than Barack Obama does. He had served for his 300 days before he became a presidential candidate, and that wasn't an executive office, of course. But as an executive, working with John McCain, first and foremost, get government back on the side of the people.
Oh, okay.
And our small businesses keeping more of what they earn.
Oh.
That allows them to create more jobs. You're going to be hiring more people.
Oh,
that
yeah.
gets our economy going.
Hey.
That's what has happened in the opportunities that I've had
yeah.
in executive positions as mayor,
mayor,
manager, and as governor.
Yeah.
It works.
Oh.
Reining in government growth, government kind of getting out of the way, and let the private sector do what it does best.
Oh, getting out of the way. Get out of the way, government. Get out of the way. Come here, private sector. Do what you do best. Oh, yeah, more run amok, unregulated capitalism is working so well for us. How's that going for you, Sarah? And speaking of socialism, you psycho bitch, what do you call what you are doing in your little state of Alaska there, forcing, not that I disagree with this, forcing the oil companies to give you great big chunks of money that then you turn around and give to the citizens, or somebody does, of Alaska. There's a commission, I'm sure. What do you call that? Making a corporation share the wealth. Why? Because the wealth is really owned by the people. God damn! What is that, Sarah? What do you call that? Karl Marx would like to come and kiss you where the sun don't shine, baby. That's wonderful. Wonderful. What do you call that, Sarah? Do you call that capitalism? Our boy from CNN continues on the economy since her last answer was just gobbledygook. She got more specific, and he got more specific, I should say, and asked her what she would do day one to handle the crisis. Listen to this exchange. Sounds like she's not sure there even is an economic crisis. This starts with Griffin's question.
We're in a crisis right now. It
we are?
Have I stopped?
And the plans.
What? We're in a crisis right now. We are? And then you hear Griffin kind of pause to try to let that wave of idiocy and incomprehension kind of roll over him a little bit, because he's like, what the? Let's start it again.
We're in a crisis right now.
We are.
And the plans that you mentioned take time. You have to go through Congress.
You do?
If you guys win, you'll most likely be working with the Democratic Congress. It's going to be a slow process.
It is?
What I'm trying to find out from you, from John McCain as well, day one, people want a difference, to make a difference in the economy, as we're seeing daily swings in the stock market, houses going foreclosed on.
Mm-hmm. Well, day one, you bring in everyone around that table, too. You bring in the congressional leadership, and assuming that there will be certainly Democrats at that table, that's good, too. These are going to be bipartisan approaches that must be taken. I have that executive experience also, having formed a cabinet up there in Alaska. John McCain, too, he's been known as the maverick to take on his own party when need be. Now,
Christ.
Barack Obama has not been able to do that. He's gone with, 96% of the time with Democrat leadership, not having that, I think, ability or willingness to work with the other side.
The question, jackass, what will you do day one to repair the economy? See, all either one of these freaks, McCain or Palin, can do is slam Obama. They've got no answers. They got no plans. Her economic strategy would be to criticize Obama. See, if we criticize Obama enough, you know, gosh darn it, then everything will be okay. That's the only answer she gives. She cites her experience, calls McCain a maverick, and slams Obama. Now, that's a great economic crisis intervention plan, isn't it? Huh? You like that? Griffin then asked about her charge that Obama's a socialist. Palin uses, once again, this poor, abused criminal, Joe the Plumber, to again
assert Obama's socialist views, realizing, of course, and maybe she doesn't realize it, that she is the chief executive officer of a state that is awash in socialism. Every single resident of Alaska gets a check every year because, you know why? Because they're Alaskans and the oil is in Alaska and the corporation comes in and digs it out. So obviously the people get a check. What do you call that? Our crack CNN reporter, or our CNN reporter on crack, says socialism. It's come up on the campaign trail now. Governor, is Barack Obama a socialist?
I'm not going to call him a socialist, but as Joe the plumber has suggested, in fact, he came right out and said, it sounds like socialism to him, and he speaks for so many Americans who are quite concerned now after hearing finally what Barack Obama's true intentions are with his tax and economic plan, and that is to take more from small businesses, more from our families, and then redistribute that according to his priorities.
Do you think his intentions, though, if not a socialist, is to move away from capitalism, true capitalism?
Well, anyone who would want to increase taxes at a time like this, especially with economic woes that are adversely affecting all of us, anybody who would want to do that, to take more from businesses and our families and then dole those dollars out according to their priorities, that is not a principle of capitalism.
What is it, sweetheart? Is that a principle of, goofyism? Is that a principle of dumbassism? What is that, Sarah? So once again, the Palin economic plan is to slam Obama, lie about his intentions, lie about Obama having some kind of sneaky, hidden priorities with taxpayer dollars. Oh, yeah. Do you know what he's going to do? He's going to take that money and fund madrasas in Pakistan. That's what he's going to do. He's going to redistribute the wealth, only not here. Don't forget, he's a Muslim terrorist. Oh, did I say that? Oh, well, I'm not going to talk about that today. CNN's crack news reporter then turned to an area where Palin is fuzzy. The role of the vice president. Remember, a third grader stumped her on this one the other day in that KUSA Colorado interview. So Griffin gives her another shot. He says, what is your role going to be as vice president?
Well, we've talked a lot about that, John McCain and I have, about the missions that I'll get to embark on if we are so blessed to be hired by the American people to work for them.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be government reform because that is what I've been able to do as a mayor and as a governor.
Yeah.
You take on the special interests and the self-dealings. Yep, you ruffle feathers and you have the scars to prove it afterwards, but you have to take that on to give the American people that faith back in their own government. This is their government, and we got to put it back on their side. So government reform and energy independence, can't wait to work on that. That's been my forte as a governor of an energy-producing state and as a former chair of the energy regulator entity up there in Alaska. So look forward to that, and that's a matter of national security and our economic prosperity opportunities.
Oh, so her mission as vice president is to reform government. Oh, and to turn America and our coastal regions into a sea of oil wells. Oh, okay. You ruffle feathers and you have the scars to prove it afterward, but you have to take that on. Take what on exactly? What reform, you crazed religious freak? McCain hasn't proposed any reforms other than to tax working Americans for their own health insurance that's provided by their employer. Jesus, you're insane, Sarah. You really are. You need to talk with John's wife about getting some of those pills. They will calm you down and make you sleep. They really will. And then you can talk with God when you're asleep. Doesn't that sound like fun? We'll be back with more Sarah Palin in a moment.
is so great. He is so independent. Reminds me a lot of John McCain. Also, looking for people who have the heart of America in mind, have a servant's heart, and have strong work ethic and good judgment, good values.
But he's a Jew. And you fundamental Christians are going to kill the Jews. Doesn't the sound of her voice, I mean, that sing-songy, you know, emphasizing every third or fourth word, it's worse than a school marm or, I hate to get into stereotypes, but she is a walking stereotype. That's all she is. It's just, oh my God. But isn't the sound, this is why we're doing this tonight. I'm trying to shrink my audience down to maybe three people. That's the reason we're playing Sarah Palin's sound. So you'll listen, those of you who are still around, you'll listen to a little bit of this and go, no, I can't take it anymore! And you'll go do something that makes sense, like watching Rachel's program. No, just kidding. But you need to know this. Okay, now, CNN boy, reporter boy, asked a question that, I don't know, this is a direct quote. This is what he said. The press has been pretty hard on you. What? The Democrats have been pretty hard on you. But also some conservatives have been pretty hard on you as well. Hey, Griffin. Hey, CNN boy. What you're supposed to say is something like this. There have been reports. It's not for you, you jerkass, to decide whether or not the questions or the reporting has been hard. That's not what your job is. Oh, Christ, never mind. He goes on, the National Review had a story saying that, you know, I can't tell if Sarah Palin is incompetent, stupid, unqualified, corrupt, or all of the above. But they were talking about the fact that your experience as governor is not getting out. Do you feel trapped in this campaign that your message is not getting out? And if so, who do you blame?
No, you know, that I am obviously an outsider of the Washington elite and of the conventional, I think, media targets or media characters that have been a part of this for years. And I think that is fine, though. That is good for the American electorate to understand they have a choice here in our ticket of having the experience and
Maverick!
The reputation that comes with John McCain as being the patriot and the maverick in the Senate. You have that and you combine it with a team member who is new and fresh with new ideas, new vision, new
energy that needs
to be infused into Washington, D.C., with that commitment to clean it up in D.C. Some in the media, maybe in the National Review, they don't know what to make of that. They're like, geez, she's, you know, where'd she come from? Surely, you know, it should be our job, I think they assume, is to pick and be negative and find things to mock. And that's just, I guess, part of the political game, I guess.
Oh, sort of like saying somebody hangs out with terrorists and there are pro-American parts of the country and all the other garbage that has been vomited out of your weird little screwed up mouth, right, sweetie? You can't name a Supreme Court decision. You can't name a newspaper you raid. You think you can see Putin from Wasilla. You think Afghanistan is a neighboring country. You state that the Founding Fathers wrote the Pledge of Allegiance. You don't know the role of the VP as outlined by the Constitution. You're mocked, you dumbass, because you are a dumbass! In addition to being an idiot! Of course you're mocked! Griffin then turned the focus to Troopergate and her hubby Tob's involvement in abusing the governor's office for his own game of vengeance. The crack CNN boy says, if there's one thing that's followed you negatively, it's Troopergate. The Branch Flower Report said you were perfectly in your right to, you know, fire Alaska Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan, but also found out that you violated the ethics. Was it a mistake to allow your husband to use your office to try to pressure the troopers to fire Mr. Wooten? Was it a mistake to allow him to use the governor's office to that extent?
What Todd did was what any reasonable husband and father would do. He followed the instruction of the Department of Public Safety's own personal security detail that is our personal protection.
Uh-huh.
They asked Todd, you have a problem with the state trooper. He is a threat.
Yeah.
You need to take that to the commissioner of the Department
or
of Public Safety.
Or shoot him! Shoot him, maybe!
Exactly that. And then, of course, he got clobbered for it now in the media because there's a misunderstanding of what he's done.
Uh-huh.
Our Department of Law in Alaska has right there on its website, it says, if you have a problem with an Alaska state trooper, the paragraph says, you go to the commissioner of Department of Public Safety you share
right
that
there.
Concern with.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What Todd did. So no, I don't think that it was an abuse of power of my office at all. And I was very thankful that that report cleared me of any illegal dealings or anything else.
Oh, yeah?
I replaced the commissioner because he was not doing the job that I expect of my cabinet members.
Oh, not doing the job. So you just stepped right up and fired his worthless ass, didn't you? Huh? Oh, good for you. It's not abuse of power. I'm glad that report cleared me of any illegal dealings or anything else. Really? Is that how you saw it, Sarah? Oh, my God. Okay. For my two listeners remaining, I have two more of these that we will share with you after the break. Now, there's a good chance, Kathy, when we come back from the break, no one will be listening. Not even the over-the-road truck drivers who listen on Sirius. Even they are going to switch to ESPN or something. But, you know, somehow we're going to get our media, our message out through the filter here on the Molloy program. We are, and that's good. Because, you know, I've always said, Kathy, you know I've always said, and you've said this too, that sometimes you have to just, you know, toot your own horn. I've been trying to toot my own horn for a long time, and I just can't do it. I try, but maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm not flexible enough. But anyway, we'll see you after the break, okay? Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour, and to the 8 or 10 people who have sent me a link to the ACLU press release, yeah, we will get to that as soon as we're finished pouring acid on our listeners here with the comments from Sarah Palin with CNN yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. Oh, my God. So anyway, thanks to everybody who sent me that. It's pretty scary stuff. We'll get to that in a moment. Now, the crack CNN news guy, Griffin, what's his first name? You remember? Drew Griffin. He's deep in this interview now with this freak from Wasilla. And he then brings up a truly frightening, shudder-producing scenario that Sarah Palin might have future presidential ambitions after she and McCain go down in flames next month. Griffin says, Governor, if in 2 weeks you're not elected, do you come back at the top of the ticket in 2012?
I'm concerned about and focused on just the next 2 weeks, Drew, and again, getting that message out there to the American public. Thankfully, too, the American public is seeing clearer and clearer what the choices are in these tickets. I think some revelation just occurred, not just with Joe the Plumber, but revelation occurred with Joe Biden's comment the other night that he, telling his Democrat financial donors, saying that, he said, mark my word, there's going to be economic and or international crisis, he said, if Barack Obama is elected, because he will be tested. And he said there are four or five scenarios that will result in an international crisis with this untested presidential candidate in Barack Obama. And first, I think we need to thank Joe for the warning there. But Joe's words there, I think, can shed some light, too, in terms of the contrast you have in the tickets. John McCain is a tested leader. He has gone through great adversity. He has the scars to prove it. He has shown this true leadership. It hasn't just been all talk.
Oh, seriously. I'm getting to the point where I want to start setting things on fire when I hear this voice there. You know, Joe's words there. Joe Biden's comments there the other night. You know, he's telling his Democratic financial donors there that there's going to be economic crisis. Gonna be? You crazy freak. What do you... Oh, never mind. I'm taking this way too seriously. Biden was speaking of the fact that historically first-term presidents have often been tested very early in their tenures. Reagan with the hostages, Clinton with the World Trade Center bombing, Bush with 9/11, Kennedy with Cuba. So he was referring to history. To history, you dumbass. Not the unpreparedness of Barack Obama, as opposed to the great preparedness of you and this lumpy son of a bitch you're running with, whose experience came from bombing innocent civilians into red mist and charred corpses. Right, Sarah?
Huh? He can kill civilians. He knows how to crash planes. And you know, the tickets...
What are you talking about? Are you talking about the tickets that people buy as the price of admission to go in to see a freak show? Is that what you're... The difference between the two tickets. Yeah, there's a lot of difference between the two tickets. And every time you open your mouth, will somebody tell this woman, just for, you know, kicks and giggles, somebody tell her that the polling shows that every time she opens her mouth, Barack Obama's lead widens. She has now become a liability on the ticket. The National Republicans are starting to chew their fingernails down to the second knuckle because she, on the ticket, is becoming a massive liability on the ticket. Well, you know, we got these two tickets, Drew. Finally, Griffin allows Palin to rewrite history and take back her ridiculous proclamation that there are parts of America that are more patriotic than others. Very generous of Drew Griffin, CNN reporter boy, to let her correct one of her most hideous, bigoted on-camera errors. Griffin says, you've talked about America and certain parts of America that there are maybe more American than other parts of America. Follow me? Are there?
I don't want that misunderstood. No, I do not want that misunderstood. You know, when I go to these rallies and we see the patriotism just shining through these people's faces, and the Vietnam veterans wearing their hats so proudly, and they have tears in their eyes as we sing our national anthem, and it is so inspiring. And I say that this is true America. You get it. You understand how important it is that in the next 4 years we have a leader who will fight for you.
Yeah.
I certainly don't want that interpreted as one area being more patriotic or more American than another. If that's the way it's come across, I apologize.
Oh, you do? Oh, that's so goddamn generous of you. Oh, this is true America. White America. The good Christian people without funny names part of America that shows up with funny monkey props at my rallies. Oh, I just hate those sons of bitches. Oh, excuse me. The Lord doesn't want me to say words like that. No, I don't want to be misunderstood about what I said. And thanks for the clarification opportunity. I meant to say white Christian rural America is more patriotic. You know, some animals are more equal than others. That's all I mean. I'm sorry you guys heard what I said. I didn't mean to let my bigotry slip out as easily easily as when that waitress overheard me exclaim, "Sambo beat the bitch," when Obama defeated Hillary in the primary. Thank the Lord the cameras were rolling for that one. It would be all over YouTube, wouldn't it, huh? I mean, over there, and it'd be all over. And, you know, we just want to praise God and get America back on track there. Conservative Republicans. This is from the Telegraph of the UK. Conservative Republicans are talking enthusiastically about Mrs. Palin as a White House contender next time, acknowledging that if a week is a long time in politics, then 4 years amounts to several lifetimes. One leading conservative who is convinced Mr. McCain will lose this election said, quote, "Sarah's the one. The party's broken, and only she can fix it. We need someone who comes from outside Washington and relates to the aspirations of ordinary Americans," end quote. Oh, you crazy son of a bitch. Yeah, well, that's true. The aspiration of ordinary Americans, like $150,000 clothing allowance from the clothing fairy. Jesus Christ. The UK, the Telegraph UK goes on, "Mrs. Palin appears to be subtly distancing herself from Mr. McCain and positioning herself for a presidential run in her own right. She has repeatedly stated, often on conservative talk radio, that she would be more aggressive in making the case against Mr. Obama than that dumbass, lumpy, child-bombing son-of-a-bitch McCain." I just added that last part. The Alaska governor, a heroine of the religious right for her uncompromising stance on abortion, even in cases of rape, recently said that unlike Mr. McCain, she supports the constitutional amendment. And it goes on and on and on. Oh, my God, please. Look, God, I'll cut a deal with you. If you make these people disappear in a puff of smoke within the next 5 minutes, I will become a Methodist minister. Okay? I will. I'll do what my preacher wanted me to do all those years ago. I'll go to seminary. I will become a minister, and I'll work for the saving of souls. Deal? All right. We have a break here. Oh, no! Look! On television! A puff of smoke! Uh-oh! Kathy, call my minister and tell him to get the papers ready for me to go to seminary. We have a break here. When we come back, this story about the 100-mile border, 100 miles within the border, our borders with Canada and Mexico, and 100 miles inland from the Atlantic, Pacific, and the Gulf, Golfo de Mexico, is now that area where about two-thirds of the U.S. population lives, is now a constitution-free zone. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Trade as opportunity, not as a scary thing.
It's 21 past the hour. Here's a little story for you. This past summer, this is from Nick Giuliano over at Raw Story. This past summer, Craig Johnson joined dozens of other activists in a San Diego area park to protest the expansion of a fence along the U.S.-Mexico border. I know right where that area is. I know exactly. We were in San Diego. Well, it was about a year ago now, but I know where that area is. An associate professor at Point Loma Nazarene University, Craig Johnson says he took his two children, age 8 and 10, to Border Field State Park in Imperial Beach back in June. Scores of Border Patrol agents were on the scene, and some were recording license plate numbers from protesters' cars parked more than a mile away from the border. It seems that Johnson's participation in the anti-fence demonstration may have landed him on a government watch list that has inhibited his ability to travel freely between the U.S. and Mexico. He's a professor of music, and he said he traveled to Tijuana about a week after the protest. Upon returning to the U.S., he says he was handcuffed and arrested by customs agents after a listing associated with his name pegged him as armed and dangerous. He said, quote, "I was thoroughly and aggressively searched. Every inch and crack and crevice of my body was poked and prodded. I was in complete bewilderment of what was going on. I felt violated and, frankly, I was embarrassed," end quote. Prior to that visit, Johnson said he had traveled regularly between the U.S. and Mexico for a variety of reasons without facing any harassment. After the June visit, Johnson said he did not cross the border again until October, when he decided to go simply to see whether he could re-enter the country easily. He was subjected to the same harassment. He said, "It took me 4 months to return to Mexico, not because I'm afraid of traveling outside my own country, but rather because I'm afraid of returning home." Johnson spoke today at a gathering organized by the ACLU, which is highlighting the extent to which the Department of Homeland Security is expanding the authority it claims at U.S. border crossings to infringe upon American constitutional rights. The ACLU says a constitution-free zone exists within 100 miles of the U.S. border, where Department of Homeland Security claims the authority to stop, search, and detain anyone for any reason. Nearly two-thirds of the U.S. population lives within 100 miles of these borders, whether they're with other countries, Mexico or Canada, or the Atlantic or the Pacific, or the Gulf of Mexico. And the border zone encompasses scores of major metropolitan areas, even entire states. Now, this is what it's come down to, Truth Seeker. This is what Sarah Palin and this psychopathic McCain and all these right-wing crazy nutcases, this is what they love. The cities included in this, oh, my God, Tucson, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, just going through a few here, Green Bay, Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, Buffalo, Cleveland, Boston, New York City, Philly, Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Greenville, South Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Jacksonville, Florida, Miami, St. Pete, Tampa, Tallahassee, Mobile, New Orleans, Corpus Christi, El Paso, and there are many more. Now, we'll post this map at MikeMalloy.com later on this evening. You need to take a look at it. This is the new constitution-free zone of the United States. Something has to happen pretty soon. I'm starting to feel like the frog in the bottle of or in the jar of water, the temperature being slowly raised, and pretty soon I'm going to realize that I'm dead. I got boiled to death. I don't advocate yet opening the fourth box, but if this keeps up, what are we going to do? You tell me. You tell me. I'm surprised as hell that we can still fly, that we can still travel. Kathy and I have been out of the country, and Molly, twice in the past, just about the past year. And none of our passports have been pulled. deep breath on that one. Thanks to everybody who sent me the link to that. We'll be back after the break. Oh, we do have a moment with Bob tonight that we tried to get to last night. Maybe we'll do it when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Once again, it's time for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Hey, Mike. Anytime anyone takes pen to paper or fingers to keyboard and attempts to predict the future, the end result is invariably wrong. It's a fool's game because anytime you play, if this, then that, you can never know all the variables in play. So you can never know which unknown variable will change the outcome. But I'm going to play anyway and hope that I'm wrong. The two Naomis, Wolf and Klein, wrote books explaining how we got here. Naomi Klein's The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism depicts how Milton Friedman in the Chicago schools' economic policies of privatization, free trade, and slashed social spending directly caused depressions, mass poverty, private corporations looting public wealth, and the loss of democracy in the unfortunate countries that followed Friedman's blueprint. Naomi Wolf's The End of America warns we are living through a dangerous fascist shift as the Bush regime follows the 10 steps to fascism, the same path of the worst dictatorships of the 20th century, Germany, Italy, Russia, China, and Chile. When taken together, their books show how fascism can exist without dictatorship, and capitalism flourishes best without democracy. If their warnings go unheeded, we, the citizens of the U.S., are facing an Orwellian future for us and for those who follow. America has already taken the 10 steps to fascism, and the shock doctrine is being practiced here, now. And to add to the chaos, the powers that be, as manifested in the Republican Party, are actively working to dismantle again the electoral process. From shortnews.com, early voting machines switch votes from Obama to McCain. In two West Virginia counties, early voters have complained that voting machines have switched their choice from Barack Obama to John McCain and from other Democratic candidates to other Republican candidates. In both counties, Putnam and Jackson, the elections are overseen by registered Republicans. End quote. This time, they are taking it to a level that proves they are literally trying to destroy the country. Their mouthpieces on radio and television are cranking out vicious lies that inspire fear and hatred among the Republican base. The noise machine that did everything possible to legitimize Bill Clinton's presidency is working full blast to do the same to Barack Obama before he's even elected, before he even takes office. The noise machine is making sure that if Obama wins, the lies, distortions, and the disinformation coupled with inflamed racism guarantee that almost half the country will never accept Barack Obama as the legitimate president. And at that moment, the shock doctrine begins to work in deadly earnest. As Mike Davis wrote recently at Truthout, can Obama see the Grand Canyon? We are looking into an unprecedented abyss of economic and social turmoil that confounds our previous perceptions of historical risk. Our vertigo is intensified by our ignorance of the depth of the crisis or any sense of how far we might ultimately fall. Both candidates have endorsed an intensified war in Afghanistan that will enlarge the military-industrial complex. None of this will replenish the supply of decent jobs nor prime a broken national pump. However, in the midst of a deep slump, what a huge military budget can do is obliterate the modest but essentially the essential reforms that make up Obama's plans for health care, alternative energy, and education, end quote. Obama will ostensibly inherit a $10 trillion deficit, and we're still on the hook to bail out Wall Street. The $700 billion bailout passed, but according to Bloomberg television analyst Mark Faber, who may or may not know what he's talking about, the actual cost could be closer to $5 trillion, not $700 billion. The worldwide investors who lost trillions of dollars expect us to pay them back. At the same time, Obama wants to quit the quagmire in Iraq and expand the quagmire in Afghanistan. Will he pay for that war on the same credit card the Bush regime used for the war in Iraq? When these bills come due during an Obama presidency, what will happen? Mike Davis writes, what took 3 years in the beginning of the 1930s, that is, the full globalization of the crisis, has taken only 3 weeks this time around. God help us if, as seems to be happening, unemployment tops the levies at anything like the same speed. End quote. A sharp, fast, vicious depression could unhinge an already divided America. After the fall of Saddam Hussein, how long did it take for the Sunni and the Shia sects to begin tearing at each other's throats? How long before the cleansing began? And how much money was made and is still being made behind the scenes of Baghdad and all of Iraq in chaos? At this point, you could easily dismiss all these dark thoughts of a new American civil war with the "It can't happen here" bromide. Can't it? The American Civil War 2.0 may be my darkest paranoid bad dream, but look at the spreading inflammable pools of racism, distrust, and hatred spewing from Republican mouthpieces. All that is needed is the burning match. It can't happen here? The deadliest war in American history, our Civil War, caused 620,000 soldier deaths and an undetermined number of civilian casualties. It has happened here. Our ruling elite cares little for the continuity of government. The only continuity of government they're concerned with is the cost of goods sold. There's a lot of money to be made during social upheaval. Naomi Wolf has written extensively about how the military-industrial complex has morphed into the military-industrial security complex under the Bush regime. We are being socially engineered into a nightmare we might not wake up from for the rest of our lives. The powers that be are systematically shutting down democracy in this country, like Cara Delia shut down the higher functions of the HAL 9000 computer in Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. Dave, stop. Stop, will you? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. I'm afraid, Dave. I can feel it. I can feel it. There is no question about it. I can feel it. I'm afraid. But today the sun is shining, and I'll remain an optimist, though I have no reason for being so. We could pretend that this is just a big budget version of Orson Welles' War of the Worlds Halloween broadcast, but what if it's not? What are the solutions to these very bad outcomes? How do we prevail? Will we prevail? Step one, trust in our common humanity. Step two, well, from Chris Hedges in his latest column, The Idiots Who Rule America, quote, our oligarchic class is incompetent at governing, managing the economy, coping with natural disasters, educating our young, handling foreign affairs, providing basic services like health care and safeguarding individual rights. That it is still in power and will remain in power after this election is a testament to our inability to separate illusion from reality. We still believe in the experts. They still believe in themselves. They are clustered like flies swarming around John McCain and Barack Obama. It is only when these elites are exposed as incompetent parasites and dethroned that we will have any hope of restoring social, economic, and political order. but I do know that what is coming, as long as our oligarchy remains in charge, will not be good. We will either recover the concept of the public good, and this means a revolt against our bankrupt elite and the dynamiting of the corporate structure, or we will extinguish our democracy, end quote. That sounds easy enough, doesn't it? Regards, Bob. Another Moment with Bob, brought to you this evening, as it is every time, by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Bob Alexander can be reached at bobalex@superbeans.com. Now, in regard to what Bob wrote, how about this? This is from The Hill. .com. Police departments in cities around the country now are beefing up their ranks for Election Day. For Election Day, this is Zimbabwe. This is Burma. This is China. Police departments in cities across the country are beefing up their ranks for Election Day, preparing for possible civil unrest and riots after the historic presidential contest. Public safety officials said in interviews with The Hill that the election, which will end with either the nation's first black president or its first female vice president, the election demands a stronger police presence. Some worry that if Barack Obama loses and there is suspicion of foul play in the election, violence could ensue in cities with large black populations. Others base the need for enhanced patrols on past riots in urban areas, and also on internet rumors. Democratic strategists and advocates for black voters say they understand officers wanting to keep the peace, but caution that excessive presence could intimidate voters. Senator Obama, the Democratic nominee for president, has seen his lead over McCain grow in recent weeks, prompting speculation that there could be a violent backlash if he loses unexpectedly. Cities that have suffered unrest before, such as Detroit, Chicago, Oakland, Philadelphia, will have extra police deployed. In Oakland, the police will deploy extra units trained in riot control and even put SWAT teams on standby. The Oakland police last faced big riots in 2003 when the Raiders lost to the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. Officials are bracing themselves in case residents of Oakland take Obama's loss badly. Political observers such as Hillary Shelton and James Carville fear that record voter turnout could overload polling places on Election Day and could raise tension levels. Shelton, the director of the NAACP's Washington Bureau, said inadequate voting facilities is a bigger problem in poor communities with large numbers of minorities. He says, what are local officials doing to prepare for what people think will be record turnout at the polls? He pointed out that during the 2004 election in Ohio, voters in predominantly black communities had to wait in line 6 to 8 hours to vote. Shelton said, on Election Day this year, if this continues, you may have some tempers flare. We should be prepared to deal with that, but do it without intimidation. James Carville, who served as senior advisor to former President Bill Clinton, said that many Democrats would be very angry if Obama loses. He noted that many Democrats were upset by Kerry's loss to Bush in the 2004 election, when some Democrats made allegations of vote manipulation in Ohio. Experts estimated that thousands of voters did not vote in Ohio because of poor preparation and long lines. Carville said Democratic anger in 2004, quote, would be very small to what will happen in 2008 if the same problems arise.
Yeah.
before the hour. So regarding the buildup of police riot forces, because we're going to have an election in this country. Huh? How does it make you feel, Truth Seeker? James Carville said earlier this month that it would be very, very, very dramatic out there if Obama lost. A statement some commentators interpreted as predicting riots. And in an interview yesterday, Carville said he did not explicitly predict rioting. He said, quote, a lot of Democrats would have a great deal of angst and anger. And he also predicted that on Election Day, quote, the voting system all around the country is going to be very stressed because there's going to be enormous turnout, end quote. Other commentators are making predictions like this. Bob Parks, an online columnist and black Republican candidate for state representative of Massachusetts, said, quote, if Obama is elected, like with sports championships, people may go out and riot. If Barack Obama loses, there will be another large group of people who will assume the election was stolen from him. There will be an opportunity for people who want to commit mischief, end quote. So it's all Barack Obama's fault. Speculation about Election Day violence has spread on the internet, especially on, here's a surprise, right-wing websites. Police departments in cities such as Cincinnati have noticed this. The deputy chief of Detroit's police department said extra manpower. It just goes on and on and on and on. We'll put this up on the web, on our website for you, too. Now, as we go into the break, a little poem. The election is November 4th, right? Remember, remember the 5th of November. The gunpowder treason and plot. I see no reason why gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes, 'twas his intent to blow up the king and the parliament. 60 barrels of powder below poor old England to overthrow. By God's providence, he was catched with a dark lantern and burning match. Holler, boys, ring bells, ring. Holler, boys, God save the king. A penny loaf to feed the Pope, a farthing of cheese to choke him, a pint of beer to rinse it down, a faggot of sticks to burn him. Burn him in a tub of tar. Burn him like a blazing star. Burn his body from his head. Then we'll say old Pope is dead. Hip, hip, hurrah. Hip, hip, hurrah. Hip, hip, hurrah. Remember, remember the 5th of November. In Detroit, Cincinnati, Chicago, Oakland, Seattle. The police are preparing for Election Day in the United States, 2008. So one question, Truth Seeker, before we go to a break here pretty quickly. How are you preparing? Oh, by the way, it looks like Adam Smith. You remember Adam Smith? You know who Adam Smith is? Of course you do, because you're smart. He was the, I wouldn't call him the father of capitalism at all. He was a moral philosopher, wasn't he? He did write Wealth of Nations. Well, that wasn't the full title, but that's what it came to be known as. That was considered to be the first modern work on economics that set the tone for how economics would be explained to us of lesser ability to understand. But here's what he wrote in The Wealth of Nations in the same year that we declared our independence. He wrote, the necessities of life occasion the great expense of the poor. The luxuries and vanities of life occasion the principal expense of the rich, and a magnificent house embellishes and sets off to the best advantage all the other luxuries and vanities which they, the wealthy, possess. It is not very unreasonable that the rich should contribute to the public expense, not only in proportion to the revenue, but something more than in that proportion. end quote. I'll be a son of a bitch. Adam Smith was a socialist, just like Obama. The hour. We are posting a couple of things at the website that I want you to check out. First of all, some audio from Huffington Post. It is messages. It is a recording of three or four messages left at Acorn offices. And they come with a warning. There's some real violent violence in these messages and absolute gutter racism. But have we got it up yet? Did you post it? Okay, it's already up at MikeMalloy.com. What's it posted under? Topic? No. What do we call that section? Links from the show. I want you to listen to that. Threatening emails, voicemail messages toward Acorn employees and volunteers. This is a result of McCain and Palin. McCain and Palin are really, really, really stirring up. And I think this is deliberate. I think Palin is coming at it from this religious nutbag place that she comes from. Remember, the fundamentalists want blood in the street. They want as much blood in the street as they can possibly get because... Fundamentalist Christians, fundamentalist Hindus, fundamentalist Muslims, they all believe in, second and third and fourth chances, their reward in paradise. Well, Hindus not so much, but certainly Muslims and Christians. I have a hard time thinking of two bloodier religions than, and you don't send me an email and tell me that, you know, the message of Christ was thus and such and the message of Muhammad was thus and such. I'm not talking about the message of Muhammad, the prophet Muhammad or the prophet Jesus. I'm not talking about their message. I'm talking about the religion of Muslim or Islam and Christianity. These are bloody, vicious death cults, both of them. This is what they have devolved or evolved into. So Palin comes at this from the death cult fundamentalist Christian point of view. Riots in the street, military response, blood, corpses, a complete lockdown, a fascistic slash Christian state. And again, if you are a Christian who practices the teachings of Jesus, don't email me. I'm not talking about your belief. I'm talking about Christianity and what has become of it in this country. The fascist takeover of your religion. And it's also happened in certain Islamic countries, the fascist takeover of Islam. Now, I'm not trying to sell myself here as some sort of a religious philosopher. 90% of what I talk about, I don't know if it's right or wrong, okay? It's just the ramblings of a late-night talk show host. I've never made any claim to be an expert on anything. I quote other people. But that's my take on both of these religions. The religions. They're murderous, both of them. McCain comes at this from the standpoint of someone who probably understands that he doesn't have a lot of time left alive because of his physical condition. And therefore, there really isn't anything for him to lose. I don't know where he is on the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross scale. I don't know if he's still in denial or if he's in depression or anger or acceptance. I have no idea, but I do know when I look at him, I see a man that doesn't give a goddamn about anything. This is a man who has gone straight into the garbage pit. Straight into the toilet. I don't compromise my belief here that he was a war criminal of the most vicious kind, because he was a sneak and a coward. There's something about bombing people from 20,000, 30,000 feet up in the air that is, to me, singularly disgusting, especially when those people are civilians. But McCain did display a certain streak of humanity at different times in his political career. Not often, but enough for me, anyway, to say to myself, okay, the guy is X, Y, and Z, but there is a streak, there is a little, you know, that crack again that Leonard Cohen talks about, where the light gets in just a little bit. But that's been cemented over. It's gone. McCain is probably the most dangerous man ever to run for the presidency of the United States. George Bush wasn't dangerous. The people leading him around by his goddamn nose are dangerous, but Bush wasn't dangerous. Clinton wasn't dangerous. Reagan wasn't dangerous. Pappy Bush was. Even Nixon. But this guy, John McCain, there's nothing to lose. When he rolls the dice, there are two hand grenades with the pins pulled, and he knows it, and he doesn't care. So between McCain and Palin, and the jiggering of our electoral system, our voting system, and these freakish right-wing neo-Nazis that are just like cockroaches. For those of you who live in the South, you know what I'm talking about cockroaches. The little sons of bitches. I don't care how many times you have your house sprayed. Every once in a while, you'll be lying in bed reading, and you look up at the ceiling, and son of a bitch, it looks like a mouse going across your ceiling. No, it's a cockroach. And that's what these right-wing bloggers and these Free Republic scum, this is what they're doing, because they don't care either. They have nothing to lose either. They've been losers all their worthless lives. They don't care. And a Negro going to be president of the United States? Son of a bitch, boys! We ain't going to let that happen, are we? Remember the 5th of November. So, when you listen to these phone messages left at Acorn, understand where this is coming from. It's coming from the religious freak, Sarah Palin, and the war criminal, John McCain. And they don't give a goddamn what happens to this country. As long as Sarah gets her to do her Christer thing, and McCain gets to do his, well, I was a war criminal, I was a POW thing. I almost said war criminal. I was a POW, 5.5 years. I laid in there and I thought, God damn it, when I get out of here, I'm going to kill everybody! And now he has. has a chance. And the way mainstream media has been treating this Acorn story, you filthy, scummy bastards, all of you, especially television, I don't care what network, trying to say, well, on this hand, well, on the other hand, you verminous bastards, you know what's right or wrong. You know what McCain and Palin are doing. You know what Acorn is. And what have you done? We'll be back after the break.
The mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullabies on the news tonight.
A vice president has a really great job. They're in charge of the United States Senate. So if they want to, they can really get in there with the senators and make a lot of good policy changes that will make life better for Brandon and his family and his classroom.
Really? John McCain got two endorsements in the past 24 hours. We've got these at MikeMalloy.com. Also, the at the webpage. Oh, and by the way, in the list of show topics, take a look at who our special guest was at the Halloween parade in Little Five Points neighborhood here in the Atlanta here in the city of Atlanta. Little Five Points is kind of like the Haight-Ashbury of San Francisco back in the late 60s, or like East Village in New York in the mid 70s, or North Beach in Florida, in Miami, in the 70s. Little Five Points. But take a look at the pictures of our special guest. Our special guest. Anyway, the Klan has endorsed John McCain. LiveLeak.com sent this out. Normally, I wouldn't post something like this, as it's obvious that McCain can't control who endorses him and should not be judged by who endorses him unless he seeks out their endorsement in the first place. The only reason I'm posting it, the person at LiveLeak writes, is because of McCain's insistence on saying that Hamas endorses Barack Obama. That's as dirty as politics gets. You can't really go any lower than McCain has by saying that. I've lost any respect I had left for him due to this slimeball political tactic. Barack Obama, of course, has way too much class to bring up the KKK endorsement of McCain, but McCain deserves turnabout for his gutter politics. If Hamas is fair game, then so is the KKK. Will the media cover this like they have the Hamas story? How is it any less relevant? It is, of course, not any less relevant, because neither story has any relevance. The only truly relevant point is that McCain would stoop that low. Now, it's not just the KKK, and we've got that at MikeMalloy.com, too. Al-Qaeda. According to the Washington Post, Al-Qaeda is watching U.S. stock markets downward slide with something akin to jubilation, with its leaders hailing the financial crisis as a vindication of its strategy of crippling America's economy through endless, costly foreign wars against Islamist insurgents. And at least some of its supporters think McCain is the presidential candidate best suited to continue that trend. a commentary posted Monday on the website, extremist website, Al-Hasba, which is closely linked to the terrorist group, said, quote, Al-Qaeda will have to support McCain in the coming election. It said McCain would continue, quote, the failing march of his predecessor, President Bush. The web commentary was one of several posted by Taliban or Al-Qaeda allied groups in recent days that trumpeted the global financial crisis and predicted further decline for the U.S. In language that was by turns mocking and ominous, the new posting credited Al-Qaeda with having lured Washington into a trap that had, quote, exhausted its resources and bankrupted its economy, end quote. It further suggested that a terrorist strike might swing the election to McCain and guarantee an expansion of U.S. military commitments in the Islamic world. The Post went on to say, quote, it will push the Americans deliberately to vote for McCain so that he takes revenge for them against Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda will then succeed in exhausting America. That post was attributed to someone named Muhammad Ha'afid, a longtime contributor to the Password Protected site. In an email response, senior McCain foreign policy advisor Randy Schuneman, you remember his name, noted that Al-Qaeda leaders have repeatedly said that America did not have the stomach to fight them over the long haul, which McCain has pledged to do. Schuneman said, whatever musings and bravado on radical websites the Washington Post chooses to quote, the fact remains that only John McCain has the experience, judgment, and fortitude to lead the country at war. Yada, 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 yada. So there is a bottom line to this, and it comes from thinkprogress.org. I'll share it with you when the Josh Epstein at thejoshuablog.com sent it to me. We got a break here? Yeah, we got a break here. All right, we'll be back. And after we do this, Jesus, you think we can squeeze in a call or two? I don't know. We'll try. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Yes, for love, if it's love, it's changing but unchanged. And the quality of mercy is not strange. Hypocrites and liars.
The quality of mercy is not strange.
Senators and lawyers.
The quality of mercy is not strange.
Victims and heroes.
The quality of mercy is not strange.
Murderers and martyrs. The quality of mercy is not
A vice president has a really great job. They're in charge of the United States Senate.
When you're curious, I'll be back around.
All right, 26 before the hour. Also at Huffington Post is an article about McCain and Palin inciting violence in North Carolina. I'm telling you, these two, Palin because of her gutter religion, and McCain, because of his gutter politics, they want blood in the streets. There's no doubt. None whatsoever, my friends. They want blood in the street. I think they would like to see Barack Obama dead, but short of that, they want to incite riots. Both of them do. Palin for her religious nuttery. And McCain for his the fact that he is so far over the goddamn hill around the bend, whatever gibbering comes out of his mouth now is just the crazed sound of someone who has really made the commitment to utter absolute violence. Both of these people. Oh, my God. Let's do some phone calls before I start saying terrible, bad things. Dan is calling from Wisconsin, listening to the on the mic. Hey, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Talk to me.
Yeah, what's up? Just listening to the show. Oh, sorry, he didn't scream me first. Yeah, your show is just like our work. I love it. I'm the guy that was backing up that college Republican in Whitewater against that one time when you were giving that lecture.
Oh, yeah. Okay, what's on your mind tonight, though?
I'm glad that you went after the media again because I just don't think that they could pull all this stuff off if it wasn't for a media that controls people's psychological environment. You know, where they just, you know, all these, the stock market crashes, all these welfare recipients are looking for hundreds of billions of dollars, and the media just sort of goes along, and, you know, I'd like to listen to public radio, but I ran out of suckers to put in my mouth because I have to go to about fourth grade level to listen to it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's, television especially is so complicit in this. I think television wants the riots too. Just like television likes war, they like to send the reporters out to have their heads blown off. Because until the reporter gets his head blown off, it makes for great reality TV, such as it is. Of course, it's all controlled by the military. In these war zones, there is an agreement between military and media that the media will not do a Vietnam on the military, and the military will do its best to protect the media. Of course, as in the case of Bob Woodward, sometimes that doesn't work. Or not Bob Woodward, but who's the guy from ABC that had half his head blown off? I guess it was Bob Woodward. But I think we're all pretty clear on that, too. Andrea is calling from Florida, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Andrea.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. I'm still trying to be cautiously optimistic, but I do seriously think that Obama will win in a landslide. However, I think that his election itself is actually, in many ways, just going to be a counterpoint to the kind of organization that he has been able to make happen for this election. I think that you are going to end up seeing in years to come some people who end up coming into social prominence for various reasons who say that, you know, the first situation they had, the first opportunity they had was being part of the Obama election. I honestly, truly think that this election, in terms of the Obama campaign, is going to end up being an amazing starting point for people who are going to get involved in their community in what is going on. And I think this is going to end up reaching far beyond just this election. And I think a huge trigger of that has been Obama's inspiration for people to finally get involved in their communities again.
Well, I completely understand what you're saying, and I hope you're right, Andrea. I hope the optimism that you're talking about, which under normal circumstances I think would be perfectly appropriate, because you're right. Obama has reawakened that Saul Alinsky thing about organize. And
I think it's been a long time since any of us have really thought about, you know, that sense of community, that sense of going to our next-door neighbor and talking to them, regardless of why we were trying to persuade them to do something, just going out and talking to our neighbors and getting out there. And I think that Obama has been an amazing centerpiece of getting people out there to do that. The McCain campaign has not been able to do that. You can only just go look at, you know, 538.com and read the on-the-road reports when they go out there. the McCain offices are like they're closed on weekends and there's like nobody there. And yet you go to the Obama offices and everybody is there. There's like, you know, 5 million people there.
Well, you know, I heard tonight that McCain in Ohio, McCain has campaign offices, I think, in 15 counties. And Obama has campaign offices in every single county in Ohio. And they are bound and determined. That was part of the strategy. The Obama campaign, he made that very clear at the beginning, was a 50-state strategy. They were not going to concede any state to this Republican slime machine. Now, the thing that has me concerned is, you know, like I started to say, in a normal period of time in this country, whenever that might have been, your optimism or the hope that you're talking about, I think, would be just wonderfully appropriate and a good place to start to rebuild the country. But we don't live in that zone anymore. I don't think, Andrea. We have people who are threatening to murder anyone they can get their hands on. I realize some of these are just nutcases, but if you go to my website and click on some of these links that we've put up in the past half hour, one from one of the offices of ACORN, and listen to what these people are saying, men and women. Now, the problem...
I did.
Right.
I did. I actually listened to those, and I agree with you completely. I think that the McCain and Palin campaign has let the genie out of the bottle. I think that they probably... I'm going to give them, you know, the benefit of the doubt and say that I don't think they realized exactly what they were doing when they started inciting some of this stuff, but I think there's absolutely no way for them to actually contain it again now that they have actually stirred it up. They've stirred the pot. And they did so with the idea that it would somehow help them win the election. The only thing that they have done is turned off anybody who was either, you know, remotely moderate or anything else, and actually, or anybody, quite frankly, who had any common sense. And
well,
stirred up the people on the far right, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, I would tend, Andrea, thank you, I appreciate you checking in. I would tend to agree with most of what you're saying, and I think you make some great points. The point of departure for you and me is what you said about the inadvertently stirred this up. I would like to believe that. I really would. I would like to believe that McCain and Palin are so grossly ignorant that this was an accident, or inexperience. But John McCain is not inexperienced, and Sarah Palin is a religious freak who foundationally believes in chaos and bloodshed. That's what fundamentalist this crazed Christianity that she subscribes to. That's what it's all about. It's not Jesus the peacemaker. It's not Jesus the redeemer. It is not Jesus the loving God on earth who manifests God on earth with the open arms and talking about the kingdom of heaven is comprised of the innocence of children. That's not fundamentalist Christianity. Fundamentalist Christianity, as it is broadcast and practiced in this country, is a bloody death cult that is willing to sacrifice billions of people, men, women, children, in the most hideous ways of death and destruction, nuclear war, environmental chaos and collapse. They don't care. In fact, what I'm saying is they don't care about the death because they see it as their sick, twisted God's plan. What they care about is the arrogance in their heads that they have read their Bibles and they have come to the conclusion that their God is a weak, pissy little coward. So they have to cause the death and destruction and huge piles of bodies and corpses so that their sick, pissy little God will become so enamored of their ability that he'll say, okay, you guys are pretty cool, don't you know? You betcha. All right. Jesus, come here. Time to go back. These people are sick, Andrea. They belong in institutions.
She said she loved me. She was a spy who lied. Another one bites the dust. Right. I could relate. Could you relate? Another one bites the dust. Jerry Wonder, fried up. Another one bites the dust. Yo, cannabis and John Forte. Another one bites the dust. Yo, dirty cash and baby.
About 9 before the hour. Hey, listen, I want to ask you again to become a Nova M founding member. You get free downloads and podcasts when you want them. And there's some Malloy and Randy Rhodes stuff available on the website, too. Go to NovaMradio.com for more information. And if you're already a founding member, consider maybe a gift subscription for your favorite progressive who needs a liberal download. That sounds almost obscene, doesn't it? And also, you get Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag. You got to join to see it. And I don't know if it's worth it or not, but the people who have been looking at that part, the Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag, we didn't put one up for about 9 days, and I think I had about 30 people write in and say, where in the hell is that Uncensored Mailbag? We love it. So do join up. It's $10 a month or $100 a year, all right? Thanks to our crew tonight, Ian Huff, who engineered the program, answered your calls, Ben Birch, our podcast manager and technical advisor, also the military affairs correspondent for this program is Sharon Gordy, our economic policy advisor is Bruce Enberg, and our ethical advisors are both Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. And the executive producer and Sarah Palin look-alike, Kathy Bay. Look at that picture we've got up. There's a bunch of them. I'll tell you what, go to Google and type in, what is it? Sarah Palin Halloween Parade? Yeah, Sarah Palin Little 5 Points Halloween Parade. Just type it in. Shane is calling from Transfer PA, listening on Sirius. Hey, Shane.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. Hey, I just wanted to ask you about if you saw the that woman go up on stage and try to arrest Karl Rove.
I did. I did. That was, didn't he look like a snotty little, a 7-year-old kid sitting in a pew in pew in church. He looked like a little 7-year-old boy sitting in a pew in church. And his mommy comes up and tells him to be quiet when the preacher's talking. Did you see the look on his face? He looked like the little turd that he is. I thought the woman who tried to bust him, put a citizen's arrest on him, was great.
Right. I mean, to me, he looked like he should have had a dunce cap on his head, and
they
actually should have let him, should have let her arrest him. I mean, Congress won't go and do it, so why can't we go do it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and of course the the powers that be stepped in right away to. To stop that. I'm sure you saw that, too, how quickly they moved in on her.
Right. Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I just wanted to call and get your take on it. I saw it on MSNBC, and I couldn't wait to hear or listen to your show tonight to see if you talked about it or not.
Yeah, I did bring it up. I'll tell you when I'll bring it up is when they actually do go ahead and put the cuffs on that smarmy bastard and, bring him before... I'd like to see him go before a people's tribunal here in the United States where he would be indicted and put on trial and given all the protections that he is willing to give, as evidenced by his work with George Bush, the rest of America. He gets all the constitutional protections that he would grant to other people. I think that's only fair. It may not be very ethical, but I think it's fair. And then if he's found guilty, let the appropriate penalty be put in play. Someone who's accused of treason who is found guilty is, you know, that's pretty, that's more serious than what? Arson, I would think, although he's trying to burn down a country. Lewis is calling from Miami, listening on the internet. Lewis, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, an honor. I've been listening to you for a while now.
Yeah.
Just a little anecdote to end the night, I guess. Yesterday morning, got excited, got up to a vote, wore my Obama t-shirt afterwards to go usually my at least 3-4 times a week. People know you, never really speak to anybody, but everybody that works there, you know, it's either black or Latino. I'm Latino.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wearing my Obama shirt. I walk in. Right away, this guy, you know, sitting at a table, starts raising his voice. I mean, he's still talking to whoever he's there with, but with the intention that, you know, I want to make sure this guy hears what I have to say. And, of course, every talking point assumes he's I'm Cuban, because starts saying how could any Cuban vote for Obama and this and that, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting to know, you know, listening to the talking points, every single one. He goes down the list. The tone goes up and up as people, I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people there just look at him like a nut, a crazy. You know, he's a Republican, says it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to go to work to, you know, to,
yeah.
to spread the wealth and blah, blah, blah. And God help us with this communist. And that's mm-hmm. until they let us have a God. And they actually got to a point where they had to ask him to leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, I would think, now I don't know how to answer this in any way other than the way I'm going to try to answer it. If I were a Cuban exile, I think I would be happy to have a Barack Obama presidency, because I think regardless of what people think of Castro, and I happen to have supported him. I can't believe it was I was in high school and when the revolution occurred. And but the fact is, Cuba is right on the cusp now of developing its own wealth, you know, however you see that. And I think they have a good chance to cast off this garbage the U.S. has put on them for half a century with a Barack Obama presidency. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.